You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Learn more at wearelibertarians.com. Welcome to the Chris Spangle Show. I am your host, Chris Spangle. This is a podcast about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We talk about a wide range of subjects on this show. Today, we're broadcasting to you live from Moscow. That's right, Moscow. So we're going to talk to Heather Black here in just a moment on the American election. In the meantime, this is a podcast brought to you by the We Are Libertarians Network, so please be sure to rate and review us on iTunes, like us on Facebook, share this episode with friends, and support us through PayPal or Patreon at WeAreLibertarians.com. We are supported by listeners like you, so $1 per episode by pledging $5 a month helps us grow, and I'm always taking your questions at editor@WeAreLibertarians.com. Russia has been a large source of contention in this election, and obviously Vladimir Putin and his stance on America and Donald Trump's, well, the bromance that has been rumored to take place between the two. Donald Trump won the American presidency last night around 2:30 a.m., and since then, Vladimir Putin has said that he'd like to have normalized relationship with the United States and congratulated him. We Are Libertarians listener who lives in Russia and a friend. She's a Hoosier who used to live in Indiana and now lives. Where do you live at, Heather?
I live in Moscow.
Okay, so you're
actually on the southeast side. Yeah.
Okay, so you live in Russia, and how did you end up in Russia?
So that's a funny story. I have always wanted to live abroad, and I was given the opportunity to teach English here in Moscow to originally Russian businessmen and Russian businesswomen, and now I teach kids.
Okay. How old of kids?
Currently ages 2 through 18. I'm preparing them for the Cambridge exams.
Okay, so you're there to teach English, and they teach, English really is a second language, but it's something that a lot of kids in Russia learn pretty early?
Yes. So most of the schools here, specifically the private schools, teach English, and they look for native speakers, because there are some Russians that I've spoken to that sound almost native, but those little native nuances we have, they like sarcasm. They don't understand the sarcasm.
I found out that you had moved to Russia from the United States, I was totally surprised, because Russia would be the last place on my list based on American media. What kind of preconceptions, before you even had made the decision or started investigating Russia, what were your thoughts about Russia?
Curiosity. Surely it can't be as bad as they tell us it is, right? And actually, there wasn't a lot of research done, I have to be completely honest. Between the time frame of the initial, well, that might be fun, to accepting a job was less than 3 months. 1 year ago, at the beginning of November, I accepted the job. So it was a very quick decision process move, and it was one of those, surely it can't be as bad as they tell us it is. They tell me not to, so I'm just gonna try it. Why not?
Right, typical libertarian. So you got there, and because when I think of Russia, I think of vodka. In high school, I met some Russian kids, and they told me that everybody there is drunk and everybody is corrupt. And it's their secret service swims through vats of blood to train. I mean, am I close? Is everybody drunk all the time? I mean, what were some of your impressions when you first got there?
Well, when I first got here, I brought my 4-year-old son with me. And I have to say that within 30 minutes of landing in Russia and being out of the airport, any of the misconceptions I had was it was shattered. Mm-hmm. It was late at night. It was cold still, cause it was early, well, almost mid spring for them. And, we had people come and offer to help carry bags up the stairs, because you walk here everywhere and there are stairs everywhere.
Right.
So carry your bag up the stairs, adjust your child's hat over his ears, help him up the stairs while he's tripping. It was really shocking.
Because
As for the vodka.
You expected what? You expected that it would be kind of a cold, unfriendly place?
Well, I mean, there's 16 million people here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's Moscow. It's a huge city. I was expecting more of that closed, stern, cut off, don't make eye contact with me, don't try to talk to me type big city feel. I mean, I'm from Indianapolis. We're known for our hospitality, right?
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't expecting to face better Hoosier hospitality in Moscow than I see in Indiana. So it was shocking. It was really a good shock, but it was very, very shocking.
Right.
I was not expecting that.
Now the vodka.
The vodka. So every good Russian has at least one bottle of vodka with them at work and at home. And the reason you have it at work, it's usually unopened, and it's to give as a gift.
Mm.
So if somebody comes in, they're like, we got married. You're like, oh, and you give them vodka.
Right.
The other thing about Russians is we have Thirsty Thursdays in the States. They don't. They drink on Fridays. Friday is the day of the somewhat drunk driver, I guess, is what it okay. would translate to the best. They drink on Fridays, and that's their day to drink. And it really, I've seen maybe one passed out person on the street drunk, and it was right after May. So it was right after Victory Day, which is the big holiday they celebrate here in the spring from World War II. So it'd be like our 4th of July or Memorial Day. That next day, you know how you always have that one person
that's right.
drunk. It was like that. They're not drunk all the time. They work here too.
Right.
They want to be productive. Now, it doesn't mean that there aren't high-functioning alcoholics here, but there are high-functioning alcoholics in the States too.
Sure. We got plenty of those. Some of them are on the podcast occasionally. So... You get there. I mean, how did you learn Russian in Indiana?
I didn't. I showed up in Russia speaking little to no Russian.
I told you there was very little
thought and preparation put into this. It was one of those, well, maybe I should just, I'm going to do it. And bam.
All right. So you get there and you arrived how long ago? How long have you been there?
I arrived in March, at the end of March, so I just passed my 7-month anniversary of being in Russia.
Okay, so you've been there through the entire campaign, and let's start with Putin, because the perception of Putin is that he is a dictator and that he is someone that is, you know, has an iron grip on the country, and if you criticize him, then you end up dead. So I hopefully, you know, feel free to criticize, but I'll miss you.
I'll miss you too.
Yeah, like, what is the Russian perception of their leader?
Depends on the age group. It really depends on the age group. So the younger ones really want progress. They want to move forward. They want to leave old Russia behind. The older generation are, can we just go back to what we know? Can we just stick with what we know? And then you have my generation. So another thing that was really shocking for me getting here was realizing that people my age, I'm 31, we look at the timeline with like the Soviet Union. We're like, oh yeah, it fell in 91, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
Well, kids are people our age. At 31, if it fell in 91, they remember taking vacations with the Soviet tickets
where they were
given those twice a year trips. So people our age, this age group, the cusp of the millennial and on here in Russia, it's kind of interesting. Like, well, he's all we really have known leading the Soviet or leading the Russian Federation.
Yeah, you had the Yeltsin years, but the Yeltsin years, you know, you had Gorbachev who led to mm-hmm. normalization with the West, and then, you know, the fall of the wall in Berlin in the late 80s and early 90s, everything was transitioned to the Russian Federation. Yeltsin was the president for 4 or 5 years. I'm not quite sure. But for a brief period before he eventually took over. And in the, was it late 90s or early 2000s?
Putin took over 2000.
Yeah.
January 2000.
Right. And Bush saying, you know, I looked into his soul and saw a decent man. And there was a lot of hope. Like, because, you know, Boris seemed like that might be where we get our stereotype for the drunk, because he loved to dance and he was a very gregarious guy. But Russia had a really tough transition and was really, the economy was pretty down. And then Putin seems to have really turned a lot of that around. So you've got people our generation who do remember the Soviet Union and on. So what about some of the other generations? I mean, some of the older people. I'll let you kind of go through the progression of what you were saying. How about we do that?
Sure. So we'll start with the older. So there are the babushkas, the old ladies, the grandmas, and they are very stereotypical. That Russian babushka that you see online, that is what they are. Mm-hmm. You do not get in their way. When they are on a mission, you move out of her way and let her do it. You just let her go. That age group, it's actually really kind of interesting and kind of sad. They get a very, very low pension, kind of like in the States.
Kind of like a Social Security check.
Yeah, and it's barely enough to survive on. So one thing that's really interesting here is that the families support the babushkas and dedushkas, so grandmothers and grandpas. They will support them, and the community helps support them and make sure they have food and shelter in the winter and warmth in the winter. I guess there was some sort of reform or something done that's supposed to get them more funds, but it's still, I mean, it's like Social Security. It's still fixed income. I do not have any connections in that age group that I could give you information on with that. Getting a little bit younger, so these would be probably 50s through 65, 70. Those are still pretty strong. The men all served with the Soviets. They're all retired Reds, and they are still very patriotic. They love Russia. They lost friends, family, dads, brothers, kids, family, all of them. Everyone here lost someone. And they are very, very patriotic and love their country accordingly. And they'll protect it accordingly.
So really kind of, you know, that you've got sort of the greatest generation, and then you've got the baby boomer generation who, you know, they grew up in the heart of the 60s, 70s, 80s of the Cold War. You know, all served in the military. And would you say that it kind of resembles our version of the Tea Party, you know, very patriotic, you know?
Yes. Yeah. And also another thing with that, which I found interesting, is, you know, how that age group with the Tea Party, they're very patriotic. They're very, you know, go USA. We can do this, grassroots movements. But they are very distrustful of the Russians. The Russians are... yeah, go us. We can totally do this. Grassroots movements. And they're very distrustful of the Americans.
Right.
Because they still have that Cold War mentality, which some in the States do too. Well, Russia's bad.
Sure.
I've heard this. They're like, well, why did you take your 4-year-old to a communist nation? I'm like, really?
Right.
Okay. So that's been one thing that I found interesting. They're just like us. When you split up their age groups, they are just like the States. You get down into like those 40s into the 30s. So our age group, they're a little bit more progressive and they start questioning things and wondering why things have to be the way they are. But they, for this age group almost specifically, Putin's the one they've known for the past 16 years, pretty much.
Sure.
Since 2000. Now, he was prime minister for a while in there. But they're comfortable with him. He hasn't done anything to ruin the country.
And by all
somehow it always comes back. So
yeah, even by all economic markers, I mean he's really grown the economy there, and it all comes down to the pocketbook. I mean, we'll talk on We Are Libertarians later this evening about the Trump victory, but Trump won because of pocketbook. Everybody says, oh, it's women or it's racism, but really what it comes down to is people in old union guys and old union women. They just didn't have money. all these towns in rural America are destroyed, and they're pissed off. And so that's when you get change. And so the fact that Putin has been there since 2000, and it doesn't sound like is he a popular figure?
I would say yes. Okay. So my understanding is that he's supposed to be retiring this next fall.
Right.
I could be wrong with that time frame. It might be 2018.
Mm-hmm.
There's already a lot of discomfort.
Yeah, because the last guy that he retired, he was a puppet.
There's concern.
Right. The concern is that whomever follows him will just be another Dmitry Medvedev.
It's interesting. They're kind of unsure. They're just not. It's really kind of interesting to look at because they're uncertain. They're very, very uncertain on who is going to take over and how it's going to look for them. It's interesting. And then you get down to the millennials, and God bless them. They are just like our millennials.
Mm-hmm.
But they want change now. Like all of the change, all of it right now.
Right.
We want Putin out. We want all the change, all of it now.
Yeah, and more material, more materialistic.
As you go up in the generations, So the other thing that's really interesting here is they're kind of in fashion wise. They're kind of in the 80s, but they're really high fashion at the same time. It's really weird. Like you see acid wash jeans and mullets, and I'm like, oh god, the 80s are here. And then you see the Russian women in their six-inch heels and fur coats and pristine, beautiful, glorious. But the younger they are, the more materialistic they are.
Hmm.
Very, 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 very materialistic. Armani, Gucci, Prada, if they can wear it with a name of what is on it showing, they will. Because they want to wear their money.
So
show it off.
So yeah, that would. So it sounds like in a lot of ways there's a ton of parallels. Are we like in terms of the wealth difference of your average American, your average middle class person, from top to bottom? I mean, is it comparable to what you see, or do you just see us having a vast a wide chasm in terms of the things that we have and the income that we have versus what they have?
Well, it's interesting. That's a really difficult question to answer because the one US dollar does not equal one ruble. So when you look at the ruble, I think we're to, 65 Russian ruble equals one US dollar somewhere in there. One of the really interesting things with the income and the like is that Russians don't use credit. They have credit available to them. They can open credit, but most Russians are afraid of credit. So when they buy a house, they buy it with cash. The really interesting thing with that is that most of them then can't afford a house because they buy it with cash, and that's expensive. It's really expensive. But they would rather live in an apartment in a flat then live in debt for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, and that to me seems to
be, that is really kind of interesting to me. So,
yeah, that seems to me to be a better
go ahead, sorry.
That seems to me to be a better allocation of funds. Like you look at the debt that most students have here and it's crushing. You're going to have debt forever. And just so you know, there's a
oh my God, Chris,
big delay.
Okay, so the school university here is free if you are a Russian. your first run at university is free. 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 And you get a student like paycheck. Like you get paid. They give you money for food and stuff. It's free. It's free. Still not quite sure how I feel about that because, you know, I'm still paying off my debt. So
So moving on to Putin. So is there a lot of apathy or are people very engaged in the process in politics there?
So Moscow just went through like a mayor. Was it the mayor? I think it was like a mayor election. It was really, I saw flyers up saying, vote for me, vote for me. Don't vote for them, vote for me. I got mailers in my mailbox. And there were some commercials on TV, but no one really talked about it. Now, in the privacy of their own home, they may talk about it. But that vote is between you and the ballot. You don't talk about it with people who aren't your closest friends. And they're very private about things like that here.
But people are private about their vote, but they don't campaign to their friends. I mean, here in not just Indiana, but the average citizen, I think the reason that so many people are so wigged out about this election and so upset at their friends over this election is that people are engaged, millennials especially, are engaged in this election for the first time in a serious way as adults. And it leads to a lot of discussion between people. You have Facebook with a lot of your American friends. You understand what it's been like. Is there just not that same level of discourse? I mean, they're not divided because they have what I assume is single, you know, a singular government. They don't have, I mean, there may be multiple parties, you tell me, but from over here, it looks like Putin has a single party that he controls.
Well, I haven't been through a presidential election here yet. The only thing I've been through is like that governor election. And there were multiple parties. There were three main ones that I saw. I could not tell you what they are. My Russian is still not that good. But I know that there was the green flyer, the blue flyer, and the yellow flyer. The yellow flyer was a woman.
Mm-hmm.
Very specific, I know. But it was asked, I'd take pictures of these flyers when I'd see them on my door and I'd send them to my Russian friends. And I'm like, what's this say? What is this? And they would tell me. And I was like, oh, well, who are you voting for? And they're like, I don't know yet. And I'm like, oh, okay. Well, when's the election? They're like, next week. I'm like, oh, okay. Like they just, you know, they would ask and they're like, meh, I'll vote. I don't know who for yet, but I'll figure it out. I'm like, okay. So it's really kind of interesting. It could be completely different for a presidential or higher office voting. I don't know. I haven't been through one yet.
So moving on to what has been your view of the American election? Let's start with you and then we'll talk about the Russians. But you have a portal back to Indiana through your Facebook, and you and I have discussed, you've sent me things and you've gone, is this really happening? What is going on here? What has been your view of the American election, just your personal view of this election over the last 7 months?
It's been horrifying. So it may have looked really, really ugly from inside the border. Oh God, watching it from Moscow going, oh, what are you guys doing? Horrifying. There were moments where I was grateful that when the Russians hear me speak, all they hear is that I speak English and they couldn't tell if I was British or American.
Okay.
Because it meant I could avoid the questions about the election. Because watching it from here, you know, because I do not speak a lot of Russian, watching the Russian news is pretty fruitless for me. It's pointless. So I would get feedback from my Russian friends on what they were saying about the election. I'm like, well, what are they saying? What's going on? What are they saying? Then I would go to the main news sites in the States, and I'm like, oh, it's even worse from them. So really, I can't say that it was overly biased watching from outside. It wasn't pro-Trump or pro-Hillary or anti-Trump or anti-Hillary or any of that. It was just the Americans are going crazy.
Okay.
Like, these are their options, and they're going nuts. Actually, I have to say that the coverage of both of the candidates, in my opinion, was pretty honest, pretty straightforward. Now, they would emphasize their international goals, and specifically goals with Russia and how they were speaking to and about Russia. But that makes sense to me because I'm in Russia.
Right.
That makes sense to me. But beyond that, it just wasn't fun to watch.
So in terms of the Russian media, how did they cover it specifically?
Recently, it became much more prevalent. But really, if we had debates in the States, it was covered. If one of the candidates said something crazy or did something crazy or emails were being looked at or comments were made, it was in the news. Okay. They would highlight it. And then they would run back down what this candidate would say, had said about relations with Russia or international relations, NATO relations, comments about Syria, comments about Ukraine, comments about Crimea, all these different things that are very important to the Russian people, obviously. Mm-hmm. It was kind of interesting to see it broken down like that. I started getting my Russian news through TASS, T-A-S-S, and Sputnik, and RT, so I could see English versions of what was being said.
Right.
Because I wanted to know. And really, I thought it was, some of them were more pro-Trump. The rest of them were all pretty, this is what they said, this is, they've said about Russia, pretty straightforward
so,
on that.
So it wasn't, you got the impression here that the media in Russia and the Russians themselves, especially Putin, were all very, very pro-Trump, really wanted Trump. And it sounds sort of like they were indifferent and they would just report on what, you know, was it the lead story whenever an American candidate would talk about Russia? Or was it just sort of like, and in other news, this guy said this today about that? I mean, we get the impression that the Russians are obsessed with us and obsessed with bringing us down.
Depending on what they said about Russia, it was either secondary or primary. The really interesting thing is that they care who wins because it affects them. If you get a president who wants war with Russia, they have been very carefully watching. And actually, when I first showed up, I had Russians asking me, so do you know which presidential candidate you're going to vote for? Who do you want to be president? And then they would ask me why. No matter what I said, why? I'm like, well, you know, I'm still weighing my options. They're like, why? But what do you like about this one? What do you like about that one? What scares you about this one? What scares you about that one? It's really kind of interesting. And the main consensus that I gathered moving towards the election was that they all felt more comfortable with Trump. The main fear I was hearing consistently was Hillary wants war with us. Hillary is going to go to war with us. We don't want war. We don't want to go to war. We're just getting back economically. We don't want to go to war. We don't want this. So the bringing down part, I haven't seen that here. I see fear. I've seen fear. I've seen them say, well, what are you going to do if she goes to war with us? Where are you going to go? How can we help keep you safe?
So the Russians have a very clear idea. I mean, a lot of Americans don't even understand that Hillary was far more of a war hawk than Donald Trump, and especially far more than Gary Johnson or Jill Stein. So they have a very clear understanding of the Democrats and Hillary Clinton being the more hawkish party.
Very, 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 very clear, almost all the way across the board. There are a few cases where they're like, well, I don't think she would. But that was actually one of the deciding factors in my vote, was because I live in Russia. I don't want to go to war. They were very concerned.
So what do they think of Barack Obama?
Very little respect. He's president of the United States. That's great. Good for him. When the sanctions were dropped, respect was lost.
Well, sure.
Or when they were put on.
Yeah, a sanction is really an economic embargo that's viewed by an act of war of the people that are being sanctioned often.
And I can honestly say I have felt it here. There are foods that I would normally be able to get that I really cannot get. Peanut butter. So I have actually High Top American peanut butter.
Right.
From Arlington Heights, Illinois, that I bought here. Well, I didn't buy in Russia. One of my friends got for me. But this has been in their freezer. It's actually very, very, very old. We won't go into that. It's over. It expired about a year ago. But it's been in our freezer, so it's okay, she said.
Right.
But the only peanut butter I can really get now is German.
Hmm.
And it's not that great.
Yeah, you got to
like American peanut butter.
You got to be careful
so
with that German peanut butter.
So I felt it there.
The reason that we do those embargoes is often it is designed to cause unrest. It's like the government, we somehow think that if people can't get basic goods or if there's economic stress in a country through sanctions, that those people will blame their government. But the truth is they just blame us.
They looked at me and they were like, why are you guys putting us in timeout? Like, why are you treating us like a child? You're taking away our things, our food, and saying, go sit in timeout and think about what you've done. Why are you treating us like a child? And some of the foods that they were able to get were fruits and really nutritious foods all year round. And now that we're headed into winter, fruits are hard to get because there's embargoes on them.
Hmm.
So I have personally, as an American in Moscow, I have fruits, melon and some other type fruits frozen in cubes in my freezer because they've told me they're hard to get because of the sanctions.
Hmm. What is the opinion on Syria? Let's talk about Syria and then Crimea. But in Syria, you know, over here we view it as a proxy war between us and the Russians. What do they generally talk about in terms of Syria and the war that is taking place there?
I do not feel comfortable answering that question because I have not asked any of them.
Okay.
What I have seen is, like, it's on the news. They talk about it on the news. I haven't asked for translations of it, though. I've been more concerned with our presidential election at this point and the possibility of going to war than Syria. So I don't have enough information to answer that. I'm sorry.
That's okay. What about the Ukraine and Crimea?
All right. So Ukraine. This one, the fingers are all pointed at the States.
Hmm.
Seriously. They're one of the biggest concerns of the Russian people with Ukraine is Donbass. If you don't know what Donbass is, you need to research it. You should research it. It's pretty heartbreaking. It is a current, like, micro war zone, and it's devastating. I did not know it even existed until I got here. And one of my students, when I was still teaching adults, mentioned it. And I was like, what is that? And he was like, you're an American and you don't know what Donbass is? I'm like, no. And he's like, you guys are there. Like, what? So, highly recommend you look into Donbass, and it's Donbass.
Okay.
It was kind of earth shattering for me. But with the Ukraine thing, the stance that they're taking is, my friends here, is that, this is between the Ukraine and Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And, Russia does not have any intention of taking a sovereign nation. Russia is trying to protect the Russians in Ukraine, which brings us back to Donbass.
Interesting.
It all cycles back to Donbass there. Yeah. So I highly recommend research being done on that. And then Crimea. So Crimea, actually, when I talk to my Russian friends here, I'm like, so what's the scoop on Crimea here? What's going on? They're like, well, they voted to come back to Russia, so we let them back in. I'm like, but how'd it happen? And they're like, they had it on their ballot and they voted and said, we want in. And we said, okay. The Russians are very, very happy to have Crimea back. And I have friends who are from the Crimea region, and they're very happy to be able to travel freely to and from their family.
Hmm.
Very, very, very happy to have it back.
So let's go to the hacking, and we'll talk about Snowden too, because I don't know if you hang out with Snowden. If you could get us an interview, that'd be great. But the narrative that has been pushed here is that WikiLeaks was, you know, given all these documents by Russian hackers. You know, we don't think here on We Are Libertarians that you can necessarily prove that. Democratic hired firms claim that it was Russia. So the narrative is that the Russians are leaking information and emails and everything to tip the balance in favor of Donald Trump. I can't imagine that if they were doing that, that they would be reporting that on the 5 o'clock news there. But in terms of cyber warfare and hacks, how has this been covered, and what do you hear in the Russian media?
So it has been covered. It's one of those things where they cover it and they're like, the Americans said we did it again. So the running joke is, oh, those Russians. Like, it's a joke here.
Mm.
They see it in the news and they're like, oh, those Russians are at it again. I don't know. I don't think that they're that invested. There's too much that needs to be done here, and they're doing too many things on too many fronts to be worrying about that. Putin is a smart man. That does not, messing with the sovereignty of the United States does not make for good global friendliness.
Sure.
So I do not see that being something he would do. Honestly,
has there been any coverage or discussion of Edward Snowden? I mean, he's in Moscow there.
Not really. Only when the United States talks about him. Like, I'll see a blip on Facebook on one of the news channels, and I'm like, oh, it's time to watch the Russian news and see what we say. And that's the only time he really shows up in the Russian news, is when the Americans talk about him. Mm. The Russians are like, oh yeah, he's here.
Interesting.
It's.
Okay, so let's wrap up.
It is very interesting.
Yeah, so give us kind of your final thoughts on being an American in Russia, our politics, and your view as an American living in Moscow.
As an American in Moscow, it's been really horrifying to watch the election process. I woke up at 4 a.m. to watch the polls close. So I am 8 hours ahead of Eastern time. So I was up at 4 a.m. my time to start watching the polls close. So I was actually there when Trump was given the presidency. And I received a whole bunch of messages from my Russian friends. We won't even go into the whole American side on that. that varied from congratulations on your new president. So what do you think of the results? Have you seen the results yet? What the fuck did you guys do? Like, it, a whole wide range of things. So for me as an American here, it's been interesting. I was not one to be shy about saying when I was in the States, I would rather watch the American election from outside of the borders than I would inside the borders, because this was going to be rocky no matter what. It started looking nasty last fall, really, when I started looking for a job here, when the decision was made, because at that point I was like, I would rather watch it from Moscow than watch it from Indiana. And really, I'm kind of glad I did. It's been a great experience to see how politics of the states are portrayed outside the borders compared to how we see them inside, and how it's construed both in and out of the borders. Thing that's really surprised me here is that the way that it's portrayed to me is that the cup has always been at the halfway mark. This whole time, the cup's been either half full or half empty, depending on how you look at it. But now they consider the cup half full. Hmm. They've had a tipping point in the level of fullness. It's gone from being half empty to half full just because of the presidential election, because they know that the imminent fear of war is not there now. They've relaxed.
Got it.
The Russian people that I know have relaxed, which is kind of nice.
Yeah.
I won't lie.
All right. Well, thank you so much for taking the time. I know. What time is it there as we're doing this interview?
Let's see. So we started talking on Thursday, and it's Friday now. It's 1 a.m.
Yeah, and it's 6 p.m. here. So thank you.
It's Friday, right?
It's Wednesday here. So...
So it's Thursday. We're good. I still have 2 days. Okay.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm sorry to hear they don't have calendars in Russia.
It's 1 a.m. Give me a break.
All right. Thank you so much for joining me, Heather. Thanks to Heather for providing an interesting look overseas on our election, especially from Russia. And you, through that interview, really get to see how the American politics... not the American politics, but the idea that we are the world's policemen, the impact that that has in even a developed country like Russia. So I thought that was the most interesting part of that interview. So thank you. If you found this interview interesting, then please share it with your friends. Please subscribe to We Are Libertarians, the podcast, or The Chris Spangle Show if you're hearing this in the We Are Libertarians feed. And we will see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Get our other shows at WeAreLibertarians.com.